Hi, this is Josh Barrow. On Thursday, October 20th, KCRW is coming out of our basement studios for a civilized, yet provocative, Left, Right, and Center Live. Join us at the beautiful Ace Hotel Theater in downtown Los Angeles for a night of amusing and insightful commentary on this unique election season. I'll be joined by Kelly Goff, Gene Sperling, and Mona Charon as we dissect Trump versus Clinton, Democrat versus Republican, and fact versus fiction. Buy your tickets today at kcrw.com/LRCLive.
This is Robert Scheer with another edition of Scheer Intelligence, where the intelligence comes from my guests. In this case, it's a fellow I still think of as a young guy, although you're getting a bit long in the tooth there, Matt Welsh, who I met when I spoke at his college at the University of California, Santa Barbara, many years ago. And he had a good adversarial mind, and then he went off to Prague, where he teamed up with a bunch of editors from their very good school paper, the Lexis, and they formed a English language paper in Prague called Prognosis. Young guys and women out there putting on this paper. It was very successful. And then they came back and did all sorts of things in journalism and showed up in all sorts of interesting places on the internet. And in the case of Matt Welsh, and the reason I wanted to have him on this show today is because he defined himself as a young libertarian, and he ended up being the editor-in-chief of the leading libertarian publication, Reason Magazine. And he did that for a long time, 10 years. Prior to that, I should mention, he was at the LA Times on the editorial page for a couple of years. But from, I guess it was 2008 till quite recently, he was the editor-in-chief, and he's now an editor-at-large. And as everybody should know, except the mass media doesn't give it enough coverage, we have some independent candidates running, aside from the Republican and the Democratic Party of Trump and Clinton. We have Jill Stein on the Green Party side, and on the Libertarian side, we have others, but the leading ones are these four: Gary Johnson, who was the governor of New Mexico. And Jill Stein's getting about 5% in the polls now. Gary Johnson's doing quite a bit better in some polls. He goes over 10%, but I gather he's averaging around 7%, not there yet at the 15% needed to qualify for the presidential debates. But nonetheless, both of these folks can be spoilers, can have an impact. And so I thought it was time to turn to my favorite libertarian, and Matt Welsh, and ask you, first of all, why libertarian? What's it all about in this day and age? How do you differ, and what do you think of your candidate?
First of all, Bob, thank you for that generous introduction. And I just want to point out that that newspaper in Prague would not have happened without you helping us all out and drumming up support for us, which all of us are forever eternally grateful for. Part of my libertarianism, which is weird and an unusual path towards it, comes actually from Central Europe. When we were out there, I was out there for 8 years, mostly in Prague and Budapest. And I kind of presumed that, you know, as the Cold War was finishing in America, Cold War politics would finish as well, and people would kind of break up their silly old kind of blocks and rethink a lot of original assumptions. And I was under the thrall of people like Václav Havel, who were ardent anti-communists and who also were ardent social liberals, who thought that it made perfect sense to not have the state hold a primary role in a factory and not to spend a lot of time telling people what they could and couldn't listen to or do and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, you should be able to sit on Charles Bridge and swig wine from the bottle and maybe smoke hash and play guitar. That seemed to me like normal politics. And when I came back home to America, I just sort of assumed that there'd be a place for that. And I discovered, I think I came back like within a day of the Lewinsky scandal dropping back in 1998. And nothing like that existed. And it took a while before I was willing to have my weird politics defined as libertarian, but pretty much that's where it is. The Libertarian Party and the sort of small L libertarian wing that's represented by Reason and other people, they all sort of proceed from the old-timey notion of that governs best, which governs least. And let's just decide on the things that the minimum that we need to do that we agree that government should or could do that isn't going to be done otherwise. But otherwise, let's allow people to pursue happiness as they see fit, as spelled out in the Declaration of Independence. And in a modern context, that's just crazy to half the people about half the time. And at the same time, it makes all the sense in the world to half the people about half the time, depending on the audience. It's very interesting to note that Gary Johnson right now is polling pretty consistently at 9%. If you look at 538 and other people, usually third parties at this point in the race will have receded a great deal because people freak out and think about the Supreme Court and flock to their original tribes. But neither Jill Stein nor Gary Johnson are seeing much erosion in support, which I think speaks to how, you know, deservedly unpopular, in my view, both major party candidates are, and just how decreasingly those political affiliations are holding sway among people, particularly young people. The millennials there's never been a generation that has been less interested in joining anything, let alone political parties. And so there's a reason why there's been some polls, IBD poll in particular, where Gary Johnson has occasionally topped both other candidates among 18 to 24-year-olds. He always gets really great support among the youngest voters out there, which I think speaks to something interesting for the future of American politics.
Well, with your help, I'm hoping to get Gary Johnson for one of these podcasts. But let me broaden it to the question of why be a libertarian. And I want to confess my own prejudice here. I did a couple of shows with you, and I'm probably the person on the left who's most open to libertarian thinking, because I do believe in the original vision of the founders that the government that governs best is the one that governs least. I believe in a very strong notion of individual freedom. And I am very worried about the overpowering federal state. My problem with the libertarians is over the word consistency. And I like the libertarians when they condemn crony capitalism, when they actually argue for a fair tax structure, when they want to get money out of politics. I like the libertarians when they don't want to go marching off to all of these wars that destroy citizen control with secrecy and foreign adventures and so forth. And then I look at what passes for the libertarian wing of the Republican Party, and all too many of them favor crony capitalism and favor foreign adventure. Does it make you uncomfortable?
I'm not sure that I would agree with that characterization, just in terms of people like Rand Paul and Justin Amash, the post-Tea Party wave of new libertarian-ish Republicans there. Thomas Massie is another one. Mike Lee is another one, although he's maybe less hardcore than the other guys. Those guys are pretty anti-interventionist, pretty pro-civil liberties, anti-NSA. They, during the run-up to what was supposed to be the U.S. intervention into Syria in August of 2013, that opposition was led or co-led by that wing, by Rand Paul and those lots. I do agree that the usual traditional Republican talking point, that is when they don't hold power and don't hold the White House, of being limited government among people who are more just sort of conservative, has been suffused with that exact same hypocrisy. And that's one of the reasons why reason has long existed, because we're infuriated by that. Yeah, people. There's a precious few people who've called that out, and some of those people are some of the biggest critics of Donald Trump, people like Jeff Flake, a senator from Arizona who was tangling with him over the weekend. I think what is more interesting in terms of the characteristics of the Republican version of libertarians is that if you're an elected Republican and a libertarian, that means you are anti-abortion and pro-life. Rand Paul introduced the Life Begins at Conception Act. The Libertarian Party, in stark contrast, has from its inception been pro-choice, and that they fight about it every year every 4 years at the Libertarian Party convention, and the pro-choice side always wins. Gary Johnson and William Weld were both pro-choice, blue state, Republican, moderate.
You're talking about the presidential candidate and vice president. Presidential candidate of the Libertarian Party are pro-choice.
And that is the dominant strain within certainly the Libertarian Party, and among people who self-identify as libertarians in general, that is true. So if you're an elected Republican libertarian, you're going to be against abortion. If you are just a libertarian, regardless of politics, chances are you're going to be pro-choice. It's one of the oddnesses of the kind of a tribal politics that we have. You can't get elected if you don't do X in the major two parties, which is, again, another reason why people, I think, gravitate more towards third parties or just being independent of it all anyways.
Meaning you couldn't win a Republican primary in most places if you're not against choice.
Yeah, I mean, and the same is true now of Democrats. The Democrats retook the House in 2006 in part by broadening their tent to include some pro-life members, but that's over. As far as I know, there really aren't any, you know, anti-abortion Democrats in Congress anymore. It's just not part of the thing. Part of our big sort has just meant the sorting of us into these ideological blocks means that the litmus tests are stronger and ever more if you're going to hold on to these identities. However, the dominant trend in American politics, and the subject of a book Nick Lesby and I wrote back in 2011, is that 45% or thereabouts of Americans now, if you ask them, you know, how do you self-identify? Democrat, Republican, independent, what is it? 45% say independent. Back in 1970, that number was like 19%.
I happen to think the libertarian message is very important in this election on two points. And the reason being that on those two points, we're either going to go green or we're going to go libertarian. We're not going to get progress from the Republicans or Democrats. And that has to do with regime change and foreign intervention. And I think Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are arguing over words rather than real meaning. They both have a very tough idea of foreign intervention and American exceptionalism. And the other is the issue that Bernie Sanders raised so effectively on the Democratic side, which has been all but forgotten now by the Democrats, which is the question of what you would call crony capitalism and he would probably call economic justice and fairness. But that has to do with a rigged economic system in which the rich get richer and everybody else gets hurt. And I do want to say something in favor of Ron Paul and his son Rand Paul, that they have been very consistent. Ron Paul was one of only four votes in the Congress against the in the House against the Commodity Futures Modernization Act, which I thought was great, which not the act, but his vote against it, because that's the one that enabled all of these junk schemes to be sold. And he was against doing away with Glass-Steagall. And Rand Paul has been very good. And they also, in terms of foreign policy, were very good on privacy and against the national security state and the heavy classification. Is that what kind of candidate Gary Johnson is? Is he a—
Yes. He's running explicitly to be against foreign adventurism. He brings it up on every single occasion that he talks. He believes that even if, you know, everybody's morals or heart was in the right place on ex-intervention, that it did not make us safer. It added to a sense of blowback out there, complicated the world, created instability. That, as you rightly point out, is a viewpoint that is not being represented in this election. Hillary Clinton is the most hawkish Democrat we have, for the most part, at this point, now that Joe Lieberman has floated off into independent heaven or wherever the hell he is. And that is something. I mean, imagine this. We were in 2006, 7, and 8. Do you remember, like, the runaway executive branch of government and all the Bush's wars? And you wrote a book about the five biggest lies about Iraq. I mean, that's what the left was talking about, broadly speaking, in 06, 07, and 08. And we're about now ready to elect someone who wants to throw Edward Snowden in jail, who still describes Libya as smart power at its best. It's really kind of out of whack with American public opinion, if you look at it. Trump is a weirder character. There's some anti-war libertarians who've decided to see what they want to see and hear what they want to hear about his foreign policy, because he does criticize. I mean, he won South Carolina while criticizing the Bush family on war, which is a very interesting political development. But at the same time, he tells just crazy stories about dipping, you know, bullets into pig's blood to shoot Muslims and let's just take all their oil in Iraq and just nonsense like that. So the intervention skepticism, the realism, as we used to call it in foreign policy circles, which doesn't really have a home anymore, is only being championed at this point by Libertarian and the Green, Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. So you're right to point that out. And it's interesting to note that I think they are much more aligned with where American public opinion is. And there's only so long. That's one of the results of having this kind of rise of independence. You can no longer get away with, for decades, being completely out of whack with the dominant opinions held by the base of your political party. They will rise up and find a way to smite you and always surprise the political pundits in that process. At this point, it happens every 2 years. Bernie Sanders came out of nowhere. What's all this talk? Income inequality. My God, where did that come from? He's a socialist. So it surprises people, but that's because we now have tools to work around the system. So that's all heartening. What's disheartening is that we have two major party candidates who are pretty bad, bad to terrible on foreign policy.
Okay, but before we drop the foreign policy, let's not give Trump a buy on, you know, not that you were, but, you know, you can't be for a more rational, non-interventionist foreign policy when you want to go to war with Mexico, which he's basically talking about. And you know, when you demonize foreign workers, after all, it used to be a mainstay of the Republican Party to believe that people being able to come here and work and, you know, and get a path to citizenship, that was actually a Republican plank, and the Democrats opposed it because they had an old-fashioned view of the, you know, closed society. And I think, again, if the big issue is in terms of foreign policy is the government that governs best is the government that governs least, you can't have this wild interventionism of any kind, which picking fights with people. But let me switch, because we're going to run out of time, to the question of crony capitalism. And that one, I think, is a little stickier for you. Let's go back to, you know, the traditional libertarian, the origins of libertarian thought. I remember when I was a college student at City College in New York, we had, you know, all kinds of Marxist enclaves, but we had libertarian. We had followers of Ayn Rand and Mises and von Hayek and so forth. And the idea basically was some kind of Adam Smith notion of a free economy. And we don't live in anything like that. And that you will agree on, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we live, broadly speaking, the West adopted rules and notions 250 years ago that worked out pretty well for everybody. But no, we don't live in any kind of free market Valhalla, and no one ever really has.
Well, no, but the basic idea of a free market is one in which no one can control pricing and in which, there's real competition and so forth. And instead, we have concentration of wealth of an extraordinary degree and concentration of power, and particularly political power. Just the story as we're recording this today that came out of the Washington Post about how Bill Clinton gets, and it's just one of the many funds he dipped into, got $18 million from some private college network that he was consulting with, and this crossover in both parties of money and power. And the irony for the Democrats, they've made so much about Citizens United, but for the last couple of election cycles, they've had candidates that are more effective in getting money from the fat cats and so forth. And people have a right to ask, are the libertarians going to be consistent on calling for, you know, a free market, a free society, and one that controls this concentrated power?
Well, the question becomes how. I mean, the crony capitalism as a line of libertarian critique has been a robust one. It was libertarians and their allies, including many people on the left, who went after the Export-Import Bank for a long, long time and continue to do so. It's the Bank of Boeing. It's so that we can spend our taxpayer money subsidizing Boeing's loans so that countries in Africa can buy their jets. It is the worst of this kind of behavior. Well, where the libertarians and the progressive left depart, and it's an ongoing conversation, is that the libertarian insight is that the more you regulate industry X, the more you will actually get crony capitalism, because the people who are the highest profile, the most powerful companies in industry X will say, sweet, I can just now write the rules of competition or influence the rules of competition in a way that new entrants cannot. And so people on the left oftentimes say, well, you just want the rich people to get richer. It's actually, no, I want them to go bankrupt when they lose. I don't want to subsidize their losses. Let's not forget that both the Tea Party movement and Occupy Wall Street had some commonalities, and those commonalities and some common enemies. And many of those had to do with the bailouts that began in the fall of 2008 under George Bush and continued under Barack Obama, where we socialized private sector gambles. And that's just the wrong way to do it. We have bankruptcy for a reason. We have failure for a reason. And we shouldn't lose our nerve in moments of crisis like that. So there are some genuine disagreements there. I can just tell you that in the sort of broader libertarian network that I belong to, or, you know, and fluent with, and including, I mean, I know I've met David Koch twice, and I know of the work of Charles Koch. David Koch sits on the board of the Reason Foundation. They will tell you that they were turned around about crony capitalism by a book by Tim Carney of the Washington Examiner about this. And they wrote, or Charles Koch, one of those guys, wrote a piece for the Washington Post in March saying, here's where I agree with Bernie Sanders. And it was all about that. The area of disagreement is, do you go for solutions that involve equality of outcomes or equality of opportunities? And then what is the role here of, you know, where do you say that the government should get out and where do you say it should get in?
I'm going to answer this question for you now as your old teacher that you never listened to. The issue is not ensuring an equal outcome. The issue is stopping the mafia from robbing money from the rest of us. It's to stop people who can use the government and get the laws to benefit them so they can steal from everyone else. And the reason Ron Paul was wise, one of the great figures of recent libertarian politics, the reason Ron Paul was wise to vote against the Commodity Futures Modernization Act that Bill Clinton signed into law as a lame duck president. And unfortunately, Bernie Sanders voted for it because it was part of an omnibus bill, and a lot of people voted for it. But there were four people who voted against it, and they were generally libertarians led by Ron Paul. And even though that meant regulation of commodity futures, you know, that's what it was. Commodity Futures Modernization Act said that these newfangled gimmicks, these collateralized debt obligations and credit default swaps and everything would have to be regulated by the old rules. And Clinton wiped away that regulation, and that's how we got the big banking meltdown. So we're talking about honest rules of the road, transparency, accountability. And if somebody believes in the Adam Smith notion of a free market, you don't want any players to be able to rig the rules. That was Adam Smith's wisdom, right? You don't want a few giant political entities, corporations, to be able to rig the rules so some people can steal with impunity. And the great banking meltdown that happened in this country was Wall Street was allowed to legally steal and destroy the savings of so many people.
I think that we're in broad agreement here, Bob. Think about the kind of symbol of the tax code. Who benefits from complexity in the tax code out there besides accountants and lawyers? It's people who can afford accountants and lawyers, right? If the rules are simple and fair and understandable, and there isn't a carve out for X and a carve out for Y and a subsidy for this and a pull away from that, suddenly you don't have to have all of this firepower, and you can't rig the game so that you don't ever pay taxes, whereas someone who can't afford your lawyer and can't afford your accountant is paying at a much higher rate. So it is the complexity of the system which is the enemy, and it's one reason why Washington loves to add complexity, and that's a bipartisan thing, and it always has been. That is the enemy, and there have been, I believe, on in libertarian thought, and certainly on this particular Libertarian Party ticket, Gary Johnson and Bill Weld, they get that and write about that all the time. I mean, Gary Johnson is always talking about how he scores a 73 or a 74 on isidewith.com when he plugs in Bernie Sanders' name. And a lot of that has to do with saying, yes, the system is rigged by the powerful at the expense of the powerless. So let's go after that together in a consistent way. I think Republicans, Washington Republicans, as the quote unquote party of business, have too often interpreted that as, you know, we're the party of business instead of we're the party of free markets. There's a difference. The party of free markets lets businesses fail and doesn't bend over backwards to, you know, give billions of dollars away to the owners of sports franchises to build their stadiums.
Well, and you're absolutely correct on that. If, in fact, instead of the Bush bailout, which, by the way, is exactly what Obama did when he came in. Obama had blasted the Bush bailout, and then when he became president, he instituted the same thing. You know, save the too-big-to-fail banks, pass money on to Goldman Sachs through the AIG bailout, one after another. And the reality is there was no consequence. They didn't suffer. And so at this point, however, people who listen to this podcast are probably saying, sure, you're giving this guy, the editor Matt Welsh of Reason Magazine, this libertarian, you're giving him a pass here. You should take the Koch brothers and, you know, wrap it around his neck and strangle him, okay? And let me even disappoint people further by saying something in defense of the Koch brothers now. There was a conference not that long ago where the Koch brothers put on, or one of them anyway, put on a conference. And one of them gave a speech specifically attacking crony capitalism and calling for consistency on this. I don't know if you recall this, but
I'm aware of that. And I would add to it that at that same conference, which I'm never invited to these things, but I know who are, a friend of mine put on a presentation, and this is heavy Republican donors are at this conference, put on a presentation about how American militarism and military spending and foreign intervention is one of the biggest problems in American public
life. Well, and it's the most extreme form of crony capitalism, because if you're in bed with Boeing, I remember old Scoop Jackson, the great Democrat, they called him the senator from Boeing, from the state of Washington.
And one of your best, I'm going to interrupt you because your listeners deserve to know one of the best of the many great Bob Scheer profiles over the years was his profile of Scoop Jackson, in which he took incredible and accurate extrapolation from the fact that Scoop Jackson ate the same type of sandwich every day. Bob, that's how close I read you, my friend.
But okay. But I do want to make a point here because, and we're going to have to wrap this up, but I want people to think about this, the need for independent politics. Because my view is the Republicans and the Democrats, and I'm not telling you something that shouldn't be obvious to everybody, are going to sell out. It doesn't matter whether they claim to be for small government, whether they claim to be for small people or the little people. They're going to sell out. They're going to sell out to the same big moneyed interests. And it's an irony in this election that we're getting clarity on the issues that Bernie Sanders tried to raise. We're getting it from Jill Stein, and we're getting it from Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate. We're getting it from the Green Party, and we're getting it from the Libertarian Party. And the fact is, for all of the great drama, the great difference between Trump and Hillary, the great talk about the lesser evil, the great fear-mongering, the fact of the matter is, at the heart of it, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are going to serve the same fat cat crony capitalist interests, and they're going to engage in the same kind of belligerent foreign policy that feeds the military-industrial complex. Is that too harsh a view for you to accept?
No, that is sadly become the reality. And all you have to do is just look at even Trump, right? He's sort of a blank slate on foreign policy. He doesn't really know what's going on. He doesn't speak about it with any kind of fluency. That was also true to a lesser extent of George W. Bush. But at the same time, he was promising a more humble foreign policy and all this. But what happened? There was a crisis. And there always is a crisis. That's the thing. In foreign policy, in domestic policy, there's always a crisis. And when that crisis comes, Washington is ready to step in and reassert itself and say, hey, look, you know, well, we've been looking on this problem for a long time, and here's what you need to do. And what you need to do at every step is always to give the government more power and give those insiders more of their usual leverage. It's what happened to Bush's foreign policy after 9/11. It's what happened to Obama's economic policy after 08. It's just the thing that happens. And there's nothing in the character of either of these two candidates to suggest that they would break from that tradition. And right now, Washington is scrambling around on the very low chance that Donald Trump wins to make sure that for every kind of weird random person that he pulls into his cabinet, there's also a Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, who is a neocon's neocon. He's a guy who ran against the idea. He says that we don't have an over-incarceration problem. We have an under-incarceration problem. It's Bill Kristol's protege. He spoke at the convention. They're going to make sure, in case Trump wins, that their people are still near all of that. And it is our job as independent citizens to be skeptical of their claims and to call them out on it from any and every direction and not just listen to the lull of tribalist thinking.
Well, thank you, Matt Welsh. That's going to have to do it for this edition of Sheer Intelligence. My producers have been Joshua Sheer and Rebecca Mooney. Mario Diaz and Kat Yor are the technicians. Sebastian Grubar here at USC, where they've kindly given us a studio to do these discussions, is here. And see you next week with another edition. And maybe, Matt, you'll help us get Gary Johnson on so we can get it right from the candidate himself.
I will see him tomorrow and make the ask.
Okay, take care. Sacamos.